Let the record reflect that the time is 3:20 and the date is Monday, February 7th, 2005. Members present, welcome back, Representative Crawford. He's been dutifully attending by teleconference, but it's nice to have him live in person. And we have Representative Lynn, Ledoux, Roper, Guttenberg, and myself, Chairman Anderson. And we have two bills today.
Thank you.
We're going to bring back House Bill 109, the screening of newborns for hearing ability. I asked the committee to look that over, mull it over the weekend with the CS changes that we have before us. And if there are no problems, we'll move that out. Then we have occupations bill, fees and extensions of a multitude of boards that I, as chairman of the committee, merged into one bill so we could expedite committee schedules and move that along. And on Wednesday, we have workers' compensation coverage, presumptive illness, firemen, and peace officers. So we'll go to House Bill 123, and that is legislation from the Labor and Commerce Committee, basically a housekeeping bill. It extends the sunset for boards of barbers and hairdressers, social work examiners, pharmacists, professional counselors, psychologists, and psychological associate examiners, and then veterinary examiners. And each of these boards, as always, have been recommended by a legislative audit for extension. And additionally, House Bill 123 allows for fines and penalties collected by various occupations to be included with fees collection, and for the purpose of determining whether revenue collected approximately equals the total cost of regulation for an occupation or board. So we try to collect fees to be the same level as the cost of operating the board, and that's always been a standard that we appreciate and is certainly adopted in the bill. I see that there are a few folks related to these that may want to testify, and I think only for answers or questions, because we have, first of all, the occupational licensing head, Mr. Rick Urien, here, and we want to listen to his testimony. And then of those associations that are here to answer questions, like Alaska Psychologists Association or Psychiatric Licensing Board, we'll do that accordingly if there's a question. And so, let me see here. There's an amendment, and is that something you want to address? I assume Josh has given me notes, Rick.
Oh, I have an amendment.
Yeah, okay. That's, I don't know if it's the same one. Why don't you introduce yourself, and then... Oh, that's by Ledge Audit. And there may be an amendment that we adopt that Ledge Audit referenced prior to the meeting, but I'll get to Mr. Urien first, and we can talk about your thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. I'm here today to support the bill before you. The sections in the bill that deal with extending the boards, obviously we strongly support those sections, and the members of the professions will also support those sections. I'm here mainly to explain to you the first four sections of the bill, which deals with what I call the fines and penalties section of the bill. The law, as you know, mandates that we charge whatever it costs us to regulate a profession is what we pay charge for the fee. We take whatever the aggregate cost and divide by the number of licensees, and that becomes a license fee. For years, included in those the revenues for each profession was the fines and any penalties that were generated by from disciplinary actions. And then finally, one day, somebody probably Ledge Audit read the law, and they said that fines and fees are not included in that. Well, if for all the professions, they pay the cost of the disciplinary actions. It seems only fair that they would get whatever rewards came from those disciplinary actions to be included. And that's the extent of what the first four sections of this bill does, although it mentions some specifically, it applies to all licensed professions, and this is strongly supported by all of our professions.
So to ask a question to that, Mr. Urien, so if we adopt this amendment into the legislation, then if there's ever a fee adjustment that doesn't equate to the operation expenses of the board or commission, then that your department will adjust it accordingly. So maybe give an example just so the committee understands.
You're talking about my amendment here?
Yes.
I haven't even addressed that yet.
Okay.
This amendment Under existing law, the law says that we shall charge whatever it costs us to do that. And each year, we figure that out, and then we go through a process. Then, when we come up with a number, the law says we shall adopt a regulation to make those adjustments. You know, whether it's up or down, we have to adopt the regulation, which means 30 days public notice. We have to publish it and then do it. Well, essentially, we're letting someone else tell us that to follow the law says we have to do this. So this amendment eliminates that regulation and 30-day notice requirement, which is an expensive proposition. We have to do it. It doesn't. We have no option. People can come and say, "Well, we don't want to pay," but they have no option. We have no option. The law says we have to charge what it costs us. That's what this amendment does. It eliminates a costly step in the whole process.
And rather than go past, like I normally do, public testimony for discussion purposes, I will make this amendment number one, and as chair, move it. And if there's an objection for questions, we can have that. If not, we'll go on the advice of the Director of Occupational Licensing to make the process more efficient and hopefully adopt the amendment. Is there an objection to moving amendment number one into the bill? Hearing none, then amendment number one is adopted as written here from your example. So that's been done. Are there any questions for Mr. Urien? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Well, I have some legal questions, and I hope somebody's online to ask them. Concerning the bill and the various boards and commissions that we have lumped together and we're doing all at once. So,
my question, there is. Jean Michelle is online from Legislative Legal.
So, my question for Mr. Urien is, on all these changes that we're doing in the bill, are they, is every change that we're doing uniform and apply to all of the boards and commissions?
Through the chair, yes. All the changes in the first four sections of this bill apply to, although it applies to all. The changes we're done with fines and penalties apply to all of our licensed professions.
Have you extended it also to apply to the language to apply to all other boards and commissions also? So now, as they come up, they would, under a chapter or a section, would it apply to them uniformly as well?
Yes, to the chair. That's generic language. It goes, applies. This will be done. It's a one-time deal. This one does it all for everybody.
And I can answer that, too, Representative Guttenberg. If you look at in BASIS computer program and you look at what bills have been sponsored for extending boards and commissions, I believe there are a few, like Representative Hawker sponsored, I think the public accountancy one, and there are a few that have already been encapsulated in sole legislation. So what I had Josh do, my aide, is to compile a list of all the others and just merge them into one bill, but make sure they conformed in terms of, Mr. Urien said, in terms of statute. So I think we've covered all of the boards or commissions that are remaining that would need separate legislation, and we did it in one fell swoop so that we don't have however many, seven more bills.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And am I right that none of this legislation addresses any of the recommendations from the audits?
They recommended to extension, so I...
Yeah.
And we can have Pat address that, what we didn't.
Yes.
We pretty much just extended it in the legislation.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you can have, Representative Guttenberg, you can ask questions to Pat Davidson when she comes. Are there any other questions for Mr. Urien? Okay, and I know he'll be standing by. Thank you. Next, why don't we have Pat, why don't you come up and you can address if there's anything pressing. I know that I was a little befuddled here reading my notes, but I see that there may be an amendment that you might want to conform to recommendations in terms of extending some of the years, and maybe we can address that because I'm not clear.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. The sections of the bill before you that I was going to testify with regard to are sections 5 through 10, and those are the ones extending the specific boards. To let you know, in 2005, there are 12 boards and commissions under sunset this given year. That represents almost not quite half of all boards and commissions under sunset. The alignment happened for various reasons, and so during the course of these audits, what we wanted to do is make recommendations, not only if we were going to extend them, but also be a little bit more strategic about some of the dates we were recommending. And so we looked at a six-year period, and then given particular boards or commissions looking at their financial situation, looking at how well they were operating, whether they needed statutory changes, things like that. We've made recommendations that would spread those out a little bit more. For example, the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, we recommended be extended till 2011, a six-year extension. The Board of Social Work Examiners, we made a recommendation that they be extended until the year 2010. Which is a five-year extension. The Board of Social Work Examiners had no other recommendations. The Board of Pharmacy, we had a recommendation to go out to the year 2010. Board of Professional Counselors, we had a discussion in that report whether they should be merged with the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. We recommended, more for the sake of the Board of Marital and Family than for professional counselors, that they could be merged. If those boards were going to be merged, we are going to recommend a four-year extension. However, if the legislature wanted them to continue operating separately, we are recommending a five-year extension. So that would again go to 2010. The Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners, we made a recommendation for 2010, and the Board of Veterinary Examiners was 2009, as it appears in the report. I know that looks like it's pretty overloaded to the year 2010. However, this is just a segment of all the boards and commissions that we were looking at over that time period. And so if you looked across the spectrum, you would see a more even distribution. It's just that these here look a little weighted to 2010. In terms of recommendations that we've made to any of the individual boards, we made one recommendation for the legislature to consider a statutory change to the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers that would allow the board to delegate the administration of the state's practical examination to the training schools or the apprentices' supervisors. This type of exam process could be spot checked by the board. We believe that that type of process would be less expensive to administer, but would not expose the public to any substantial increase in risk. With regard to the Board of Pharmacy, we had recommendations with regard to licensing fee increases. There were no recommendations for operational changes to the Board of Professional Counselors, and with regard to the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associates, again, we had two recommendations there. One was to increase licensing fees to finance their deficit, and the second is that the Office of the Governor needed to make timely appointments to the board.
Okay. Thank you, Pat. Are there any questions from committee members regarding her recommended amendment to change the years? I've written those down. Should we address that amendment and any of the other comments she made? Representative Roquefort.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Davidson, under the uncodified law section here, exemption from 4466050E, are you familiar with the, it was enacted in 1977 and amendment in 02, which prescribes the enactment of a bill that provides for more than one board, commission, or agency that may be continued or reestablished any legislative bill. Do you know what the history of that is, or what the intention of that is, or have any idea, or care to comment on that bill?
Through the chairman, or through the chair, Representative Roekberg, 1977 would have been the original sunset legislation. My understanding of the intent of that was that each board and commission be looked at separately. There's having an audit, looking at its operations, looking at whether it should continue. The whole process is a very involved and relatively significant exercise and resource uses to be looking at these things. And I believe that it was intended that those then be given specific consideration by the legislature. Though we are in this year, again, where I said, we're dealing with almost 50% of boards and commissions that have undergone sunset in 1 year.
Mr. Chairman, Ed, this provision, do you have a legal opinion about this? Or?
We can ask Jean Michelle. Jean, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, did you hear Representative Roper's question, or would you like him to repeat it?
No, I heard the question, and I have to agree with Ms. Davidson that that is generally the purpose of that section.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the 050 section, it's in the Administrative Procedures Act here, I guess, is review of activities of agencies. It's for legislative oversight, so it seems to me, and the testimony is, that there's such a, on these particular boards that are included for sunset here, that there's, with the exception of perhaps one, no substantive recommendations from your audits through LBNA to make any additions or corrections to the statute. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Roekberg, the only substantial one would be whether the legislature wanted to consider merging two of the professional boards.
Right. So, in your opinion, would we be remiss in our legislative oversight, the duties of that, were we to pass this bill by lumping all these together or not, because there's very little recommendations you would make?
Through the chairman, Representative Roekberg, it's the pleasure of the committee.
Well, I'd remind Representative Roekberg that Mr. Urien, while he probably can't debate whether to sponsor a bill or not or give commentary on that, he certainly can look at the expeditiousness of legislation and testified that however you want to extend the boards and commissions, he appreciates us doing that because he has to do that as director, you know, oversee their administration. And so to that end, I think the division is supportive. Secondly, Ms. Michelle, are you familiar with the cost of how much one bill going through the entire legislative process is?
Mr. Chair, I'm not. I'm sure it's significant.
Yeah, and so I've just saved, and your assistance, you know, five other bills from
no,
having
no, I
to go through.
I just want to make sure on the record that we're still following the spirit of what the statute is by going forward with the bill.
Sure. No, I hear you. That's fair. And yeah. I think, Gene, do you think that obviously you drafted the legislation, you feel that the Section 13, which adds the new section exempting this from the prohibition to combine, so we're legal and conforming?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you as a later legislature can modify the implementation of a previous act of the legislature, which is what you're doing by exempting this bill from AS 4466050E.
Great. And then just before we get to Representative Guttenberg, and isn't it true that as we go section to section, whether it be with barbers and hairdressers or social work examiners or others, and whether we adopted what Ledge Audit recommended, which was in one case extending fees, which I'm going to recommend we don't in this legislation, whether we did that or not, that would simply be attached to the relevant section in the bill and to the relevant subject heading, meaning barbers or hairdressers or professional counselors, and that wouldn't change the construct of the bill at all if we added or deleted aspects like of fees and things, right? Either way, the board is extended if the bill passed.
Mr. Chair, not 100% sure what the what the question is getting at. If you add, if you changed, amended the dates on the extensions pursuant to the recommendation, is that, was that the...
Correct. In other words, if we, we're in the spirit of the law as we amend this with Section 13, if we, just for the record, since Representative Roper brought it up, it, we're not obligated to just extend the years. If the committee has a desire to change fee structures or any of those things, they can do that in this legislation.
Oh.
That's what I meant.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There's legislative oversight.
Representative Guttenberg, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Ms. Michelle. It seems like everything we're doing in this bill is pretty uniform across the board of all these boards and commissions. But what would happen if either in this committee or in a, one of the later committees of referral, which I think is probably finance, somebody wanted to take one of these boards and do a substantive amendment? Would that violate the single subject rule? Let's say take one of these boards or the merger, which you talked about, or change some role and responsibility. Would that take that out of the single subject rule? Or, and if that was the case, could you simply remove that board or commission from this bill and still be meet the constitutional requirements?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, the single, I don't believe the single subject rule would be violated. The constitutional prohibition on having more than one subject, and that is because we've got a line of cases which construes that article quite broadly, so that you, you still have the subject of occupations and professions. However, a change like that would require a title change, since the title does not encompass licensing standards. It's it merely extends the termination dates of certain boards and refers to licensing and fees. But if you're still in the House, the change to your title isn't a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we have before us then the bill as amended with the fee adjustment amendment having been adopted. Ms. Davidson has talked about certain aspects that Ledge Audit, as we've heard with other bills, they've recommended. I am a little hesitant, and I'm looking to see in terms of public testimony if there's anyone, there's some folks here to answer questions, but nobody wishing really to testify at this stage in terms of just the extension aspect of the legislation. I personally don't want to see it, certainly the wish of the committee, don't want to see the different aspects recommended at this juncture in this bill, because I think if you're going to adjust fees and other things by statute, then I would want those respective boards and commissions to testify and talk about what the ramifications would be if their fees were increased. And so I'm adverse to that at this time, but I'd like to hear what the members of the committee feel, if they're willing to, if they have an amendment to change that, or if they feel that we can move this on and at least just deal with the extension part of the bill at present and move the bill on in that.
Mr. Chairman, again, Pat Davidson, I apologize because I think I may have misled you when I was talking about fee increases. Those are really the responsibility of the Division of Occupational Licensing. We made recommendations with regard to those, but those wouldn't be statutory changes. The only actual statutory recommendations that we had made was one to the barbers and hairdressers about allowing them to delegate from the board to the schools supervision of the state's practical exam.
Okay, thanks.
So other than that, there's no, and then the marital and family and the professional counselors merging. Other than that, there were no statutory changes that we were recommending, just the sort of spreading out of the termination years.
And thanks for that clarification. And to remind the committee, the amendment we did adopt, amendment number one, states that, that of course, the division will be able to adjust accordingly. So I don't think we have to make a statutory change anyway, even if there, that were the case, because they can, Mr. Urien can do that now. One amendment I would like to make, amendment number two, would be, and it'll be a conceptual amendment, I don't have it written down, but per your recommendation to change, if we go to page four of House Bill 123, Section 5 addresses Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, just two lines. I would recommend that we change the date of extension to 2011, and then, as recommended, all these are recommendations from Ms. Davidson. And then Section 6, Board of Social Work Examiners, she recommended changing that to 2010. Board of Pharmacy, she recommended changing that to 2010 on Section 7. Section 8, Board of Professional Counselors, she recommended that be changed to 2010. Board of Psychological Associate Examiners, I think she said change that to 2010. Mm-hmm. Board of Veterinary Examiners was fine at 2009, so that would not be changed. And that looks like that's it. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that would be my conceptual amendment per her recommendation to extend those one more year for administrative purposes. Is there any objection to that? So hearing none, conceptual amendment number two is adopted per legislative audit's recommendations. Is there anyone else wishing to testify to what we currently have as amendment? Representative Crawford.
I don't want to testify. Okay. I'd just like to ask a question before she
leaves. Oh, of course. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In years past, if I understood it correctly at the time, you said that when you were setting the fee schedules for the different professions, if you had a year where there were a lot of investigations or, I mean, much larger expenses than normal, you were able to adjust the fees so that that you were able to recover them over a number of years rather than just all at one time. The amendments that we've adopted here, does that change that in any way? Would you have to recover those fees all in one year now, or do you still have the leeway to recover it over a number of years? Or
through the chairman, Representative Crawford, we actually at legislative audit don't recommend fee increases per se. Yes, we do. We recommend that they have to adopt fee increases, because what we do is we do an analysis, like a 3-4 year trend, and look at whether they're conforming or not. It's actually the Division of Occupational Licensing that calculates the license fees. And I think you've hit the nail on the head when you talk about investigations. The one thing that will throw off anybody, any board's estimated fee schedule, is licensing investigations. They're time intensive and they're expensive.
Right.
In legislative audit's view, there's no provision in law that allows you to extend the recoupment period into the future. However, we have seen occupational licensing in setting its fees, basically extending it out anywhere from, I'd say usually, from what we've observed, usually 4 years. The director, I think, could probably indicate what their intent is. I can tell you from our observation in making recommendations, sometimes they will tell us, well, we're trying to recover those over a 4-year period instead of a 2-year period.
Okay. So we're not changing that. We're leaving it as is.
Yeah.
Okay. My question.
You bet. Any other questions? And is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 123 as amended? Representative Roquefort.
Sure, I did have one question, Mr. Urien.
Okay.
Before I close, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes.
We had this bill before us in the past, but it's a new session, new legislature, so I think it's important that we get something on the public record regarding the allocation to the penalty in fines to the particular occupational licensing or board, and we really didn't get into that today. It might be appropriate. To the chair, Kieran, could you very briefly describe to the committee a circumstance, say, use the real estate Commission as an example where we would have the requirement, of course, of all occupational licenses that the cost of any litigation or enforcement procedures are enforced against that particular board or commission. And when you have a large amount of a major case or something, that those costs go up, and if there's an assessment of a fine, then the fine goes in the general fund, notwithstanding the fact that the commission spent all the money. So this bill would correct that. So this would, if any fines were assessed and collected, they would help offset the actual cost of that litigation. Could you just explain that to the committee, Jason?
Yes, certainly, the chair. In the case of the Real Estate Commission, we did, in fact, last year had a, it was actually over several years, a very expensive investigation of a realtor, and it resulted in a $25,000 fine. I can tell you that the cost to get that $25,000 fine exceeded $25,000. So the realtors, as it was going to pay the cost of that litigation without the benefit of the any of the of the of the, of the fine that was generated by that work. And the amendment that we did addressed that problem. And if I may, Mr. Chairman, it just occurred to me while I was sitting in the audience and you were discussing other sections of this bill, I just want to tell you that I get a chance to say that in 1977 I happened to be one of you when this passed, and my colleagues made a mistake.
No.
That's why that section is that way.
So he supports
yes.
bundling for efficiency. Yes. Representative Roper. And we do have someone that wishes to testify.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Just, well, the reason I want to bring this up is that it makes a point. Under statute, and I think correctly, each board or commission is self-supporting. But we had in this one instance a situation where you could have a bad actor among the licensee, and even notwithstanding the fact that there was a fine assessed and collected, makes the other colleagues or other licensees in that profession have to, they get a double penalty, you know, because they have to come back and pony up even for the $25,000 that was collected. They have to pay a fine too. It's like, it's the other person did something wrong, they were fined. That's fine, but the other licensees have to pay out in their biennial assessment additional monies to cover that cost. It's just not fair.
Yeah.
You know, so this is a matter of equity and balancing there, and that, I think that was important to put that on the record.
No, that's good, and I think lobbyists may not love the committee because now we've just confined all of these boards and commissions in the one bill, but I think it's important that we do this and be proud of yourselves that we're making efficiencies in government.
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you in 1977 we passed this the sunset bill. We jokingly called it the Lobbyist Full Employment Act.
Well, we have. Thank you, Rick. We have one more person to testify. Diana, Representative Crawford? Rick?
I wanted to know if there was anybody that was going to discuss merging the marital and family counselors. There's no opposition to that out there.
There is. I think Ms. Davidson, and we can have her come back up, but I think she said that there was opposition from legislators in years past when they tried to do it through legislation, not through a sunset, but through actually a bill that said we're going to merge the two, mm-hmm. because the different entities, I believe, didn't want to be merged. What I'd like to do before we get to Diana, if there is someone from the, would it be the Psychiatric Licensing Board that would address that? The potential merger, or I'm asking to the public who's listening and the professional counselors. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm giving a note here. Ann Henry, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry. I wanted to get my notes clear here. We have a lot of people listening in. What's your response to Representative Crawford, which is his question was to Ms. Davidson and to you, should this bill be the vehicle to merge those two or those three entities? What are your thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the bill or the recommendation from the legislative auditor was to merge the marital and family therapist along with the licensed professional counselor board. And the licensed professional counselor board adamantly opposes that merger because rather than decreasing fee costs to the licensees, we find that it would actually increase the fees because we'd wind up having more meetings, subcommittees, and I've discussed this with the American Association of State Counseling Boards that just had a big meeting last month down in Savannah, Georgia, and I asked people to come forward and talk with me about this, and about half the people that came up said it was a disaster to have their boards merged because of turf issues, more frequent meetings, and again, the subcommittees, and just problems that came up. And then some folks said it worked just fine, but again, because we do oppose it and we do have a lot of work to do still, we're still a fairly young board, and there's a lot yet for us to go, so we do oppose that.
Okay. Representative Crawford?
I thought it was more controversial than what we were bringing up here, and I have some qualms about just sticking this into a sunset bill. I think we owe it more discussion, because I think there's some reasons not to merge those boards.
But for the record, we're not merging the boards in this. Yeah, no, that would be an amendment to merge, and that's what I thought your question was. We're not merging the two; we're keeping them separate. But that was something that the Division of the Legislative Audit thought might be a way for efficiency in the board process. What Ms. Henry stated is no. She's from the LPC board. She says no, we don't want to be merged with the Marital, and so we're not doing that. I'm just sunsetting the bill, and we're not getting any of the into any of the recommendations other than the amendment we just made, which was amendment on the year, extending it each year. So I think you're safe there, Representative Ledoux.
So am I correct looking at this title then? We're not doing anything with the Board of Marital and Family Therapy.
Correct. And what the recommendation was, maybe this is the vehicle from Ledge Audit to add and merge Marital Family Therapy, but we're not doing that. We're not even addressing them, and which goes to Representative Crawford's concern that he did not want to do that without more input. So I think we're safe there. We have one more person to testify.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Diana Straub for the record, and I'm the most recent former chairman of the board for the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers. I just want to thank you for the consideration of extending this board. This is a group of very hardworking people who donate their time to help to regulate their profession and make it the best that it can be. And they've made a great deal of efforts. They did an excellent job in moving through the transitional process of the tattooing licensure and body piercing licensure that was put forth a couple years ago. And it took a tremendous amount of work, and they did an excellent job in every way that they possibly could. It was not perfect, but it was the best that a group of people could do, and it was a tremendous amount of work. I just want to support that this board continues in that same type of a, and as you know, the board is self-funded, therefore there is no fiscal cost with that goes beyond what we're able to pay for, and the board meets twice a year face-to-face and then takes care of all of the rest of their business through mail ballots and teleconferences in order to stay within those financial means. So other than that, as a former board chairman, I could answer any questions that you might have.
Great. Are there any questions? Well, thanks for coming to testify. We do appreciate that, especially your endorsement of the extension. With that, I'll ask, is there anyone else online that wishes to testify? Hearing none and seeing no one in the audience, we'll close public testimony. And is there any discussion from the committee? And if not, I'll take a motion. Representative Ledoux.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to go on record saying my comments earlier about the exemption from the statute, I think this bill demonstrates that an exemption is appropriate because it keeps with the spirit of oversight. Never shall we, as the legislature, want to give up our oversight capabilities, but we certainly have the right to exempt ourselves.
That sounds good. Thanks. Representative Ledoux?
So, Mr. Chairman, assuming that this bill doesn't do anything with the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, at some other time, is that set to be before this committee?
Actually, that's a question that I would have to ask Ms. Davidson when that board is up. If you want to just show me by hands, or by dance.
For the record, Pat Davidson from Legislative Audit. That board is under sunset this year, 2005. If it's not extended during this legislative session, it'll go next year into its wind-down year, and then it will be eliminated.
So the next year might be the year that legislation, this year or next, that there be legislation to extend it. But we were just addressing legislation that was sunsetting this year.
It sounds to me like you're saying, though, that it's sunsetting.
Yes.
This year.
Yes.
So if we don't do anything with it this year, do I understand correctly, it gets sunset?
Through the chairman, or through the chair, Representative Ledoux, there's actually... I do sort of monitor the boards and commissions, and there's only, of all the agencies under sunset, there are two that have not had bills introduced yet that extend them. The one is marital and family, and the second one is the Board of Dental Examiners. Between this bill and other bills that you've already seen, that would cover all the boards and commissions under sunset for this year.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to just take a real brief at ease for the LIO or Ledge Affairs folks. No? At ease, so I could find out why and with whom we've worked with in terms of adding boards and commissions to the bill. And it sounds like with the marital therapist that they have certain issues that they're working on, and we didn't want to get into that administration in this legislation. And then the other bill, dental examiners, we're working and looking at other legislation to correct and extend that. And so that's why, as chairman of the committee, I just added these six to this one for less controversy.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, can I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move HB 123 as amended with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved. And so you can sign the file. Thanks, Pat and Rick and everyone. And we only have one other bill. Let me see here. What's the bill again? 109, the one we discussed last. What was the last day? Was it Friday? That's right. And we have Representative Bram Ross's aide here to address any of the questions. If you recall, we adopted a substantive committee substitute, and I wanted to extend some time to the committee to mull it over and read the revisions. And other than that, I don't think we have anyone else to testify. I know that you are here, and it looks like Margaret Lanier Kostler's in Anchorage to answer any questions. We had quite a bit of testimony. I think all of it was in support of. And Mr. Stoops, of course, was here to talk about insurance aspects and for us to keep that in mind. Otherwise, I kept public testimony open, so would the sponsor's representative like to make any other comments or just a final? And we can certainly ask questions. Any wrap-up?
Through the chair, my name is Jane Pearson. I don't really have any more comment to make, so if you have any questions.
Okay. Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pearson, I unfortunately was called away and was at a ALEC Academy in Seattle, so I wasn't able to attend the hearing on Friday, but was there any testimony from the insurance industry as to the cost of the mandates under Section 5?
Yes. Mr. Stoops did speak on Friday, and he did give a handout, which I will give to you here.
Is that the history? Oh, I have that one. I have that.
You have that? Yeah. And he did speak about the history and how this may affect the insurance rates.
And also, Representative Roper, remember that he might be the better one to ask those questions, and he's not here, but just out of fairness to her.
I know. I understand. No, I just before the committee, Mr. Chairman, I guess. You know, the sponsor has talked with the people regarding the issue of whether we're having what's called an offered coverage versus mandatory coverage. Was there any discussions about that?
Through the chair, Representative Rookberg, I think probably Margaret Lanier Costlier would be better to answer that.
Okay, we've kept public testimony, or the hearing part open of the bill. Margaret, are you there?
I am, and can you repeat the question?
Well, the question is, was there discussions regarding the Section 5 provisions for underwriting insurance coverage, mandating that as an insurance mandate? Was there any analysis done between making an offered underwriting rather than a required underwriting?
You know, and I unfortunately am not a good person to answer that question.
Margaret, you need to state your name for the record and your affiliation.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Margaret Lanier Kostler, and I am the Early Hearing Detection and Intervention Program Manager at the State of Alaska in the Department of Health and Social Services.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Through the chair, this is Jane Pearson, Representative Rokenberg. I can tell you that in my conversations that this is already being covered by insurance companies. It's being included in birthing costs. So this is not a great leap out of what's already being done. All the hospitals are already including it, and it's just part of the birthing costs.
And I think that we can debate that in terms of that's the classic insurance coverage debate,
right,
that we'll see with a lot of the pre-screening, you know, bills. We had it with the prostate exam pre-screening and cervical and breast cancer and others, and Representative Rokenberg has the tenure certainly to remember those debates.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for not being here and asking those questions at a time, but they're very important to me because, and they should be to the entire citizens of the state of Alaska, because they reflect on the cost of insurance. And one of the goals this committee has been, and the legislature has been, to make health insurance more available and more affordable for people, not less affordable and less available. And by passing insurance mandates of any kind, they tend to restrict that affordability and availability. So in trying to do the right thing, we actually do the wrong thing. So we need to be very cognizant and aware of how we operate in terms of making public policy. You know, and that's why, you know, the incident and the cost here is an important issue. As I understand it, it may be a relatively small amount and not a major problem, but we all need to be very aware and sensitive to that. And the difference is, if you have an offered coverage, you can offer it and then the insurance company can charge for it. If you have a mandate or required coverage, they can't necessarily charge for it. They charge everybody for it. So it raises all premiums. And the problem in the state of Alaska, Mr. Chairman, is that only about 25 or 30% of the covered lives by insurance are even affected by this provision, because the vast majority of people are under ERISA exempt or self-insured type coverage, where they don't even pay. So whatever the legislature does, it really only impacts those people who buy small group or individual policies. And the big companies are the big people. The state of Alaska, you and I, or anybody else receiving state premiums, don't even contribute to this. It has no effect on them whatsoever. All it does is help make the insurance bill to the small business more unaffordable. So we got to be very sensitive to that, no matter how meritorious the mandate is to the health of Alaskans, and particularly Alaskan children, which is a very, very important issue.
And I appreciate Representative Rokenberg's concern, because that's mine as well, whereas I co-sponsored the legislation. We look at aspects of legislation that affects insurance coverage, and whereas, as Representative Rokenberg stated, the state employee may not be affected, the small businesses that many of us have worked in or own currently with very exorbitant insurance premiums as it is because of the cost of health care would make up the difference. And what we heard, and what you would have heard if you were here, was the balance between that and children who have been adversely affected, obviously, by having hearing problems or ailments. And we had testimony that there is a cost that may outweigh what's extrapolated out to the general public in terms of businesses. And so Representative Rokenberg's comments, I think, are really pertinent and relevant. But I would like to think that saving folks, children, from having deafness disorders or hearing impairment would be more costly in terms of the saving itself, would save more money than the cost extended to business and other insurance payers. Mm-hmm. But I would also add that it, maybe that information, if it's possible to ascertain, might be good because the bill goes next to the Finance Committee, and to have an idea of just how much it costs without hearing impairment testing and the ultimate medical cost in a lifetime, that might be a good idea to give a case study of that or a couple of examples.
Through the chair, Representative Anderson, I do believe that's in the information that was provided through the March Dimes.
Okay.
And I believe the number was $420,000 in special education and $1 million over the lifetime for deafness.
Okay. And that's if it wasn't caught and corrected.
Right.
And I recall that we talked about that, though. So that's the balancing we as administrators have to, policymakers have to assess. Representative Guttenberg.
The comment you just made, $400,000 and $1 million over the lifetime of deafness, is that $1 million per child?
Per individual, yes.
Per individual child, okay. Just a comment. We heard earlier this year we had a little legislative session with the Mercatus Institute, Representative Roepberg and some of us were there. One of the things that they talked about was the larger picture of doing missions and measures, and not so much as a program, but across a larger spectrum of societal interest and how you measure things, savings. You know, if we do, there's 20 children that are corrective screening for hearing, and its issues are taken care of, then that's $20 million, theoretically. But there are also larger social ills that happen out there that affect everybody, small businesses and government and just everybody across the spectrum, and contributes to the general health of society by itself. And I think those are things that have overriding public policy that need to be considered. Representative Roepberg's point on who you're putting the burden on is significant. But there's also the larger picture and the big picture and lives and families that need to be addressed.
Thank you. Representative Crawford.
Thank you. I was just looking for some clarification to what Representative Roepberg just said. So this bill does not affect any union health insurance plans or anything. We're not mandating it for them, but we are only mandating it for individual and small employers. Is that what we're saying here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crawford, in the main that is correct, with the exception of there are some unions that have fully underwritten health plans that are administered and actually insured by, say, Blue Cross or Aetna or a health insurance. Not the not that they're like Blue Cross or Aetna is a third-party administrator, and they're therefore self-insured or in a pool, but if they're actually underwritten. So there may be, I think, a one state bargaining unit that may have an underwritten plan, but all the other ones are exempt from this and had no impact on them whatsoever.
So we're not mandating them at
all? No, and you're not paying towards the cost that incurs when you mandate the cost into all other policies. So that's part of this cost-shifting problem in all healthcare delivery. When we mandate one thing, what we do is we shift the cost from that smaller group that's taking these, buying health insurance, and it shifts all the costs away from those other people over here that are paying into their plan, but they are exempt from the mandate.
And so your point is that as we elevate these and enforce or impose the screening cost, you're saying that the insurance companies aren't going to bite that. They're going to charge it to somebody. And your point is it filtrates down, so it's not the masses. It's these smaller businesses that often will incur then the payment. I think that's what you're saying.
Right.
I'm still not clear. My question is that a union health insurance plan, we are not mandating that they cover this.
No, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, those are usually ERISA or federally covered by the Unemployment Retirement Act, the ERISA mm-hmm. Act, which exempts state regulation of their plans. So we can pass laws all day long, and they don't have to follow.
So the iron workers' health care plan does not have to pay for hearing screening, though we've mandated it and said it. 100% of the kids that get born in this state, they don't have to.
That's right. That's the inequity of a cost shift here, and that's what people need to understand. And though many of these plans, I'm sure the iron workers probably would pay for it, that why us acting doesn't mandate it. That's where the problem comes about, you see. And that's where there's a certain inequity of this cost shifting when we do the health insurance mandates. Matter of fact, we had this committee when Representative Murkowski brought forward the diabetes mandate. We had very extensive hearings on that in 2000. And mandating the providing of the apparatus and equipment for diabetics to self-administer was debated thoroughly. It was relatively expensive, but the testimony from the insurance companies was that they already paid for that. So by the legislature acting to mandate that had no effect on premiums because they were already doing it. So they didn't object to that. On the other hand, when one of the more controversial issues that's come up in the last decade has been providing mandated contraceptive devices and pills, if you don't have a offered for coverage underwriting ability, that same thing happens, and that's a really significant cost that you can analyze pretty readily that would drive up costs to those people that would be covered, and then the other people wouldn't. The iron workers, for example, if that was a fact, they wouldn't have to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's not fair. You know, it really isn't. And what happens there is, see, Alaska is in this unique situation. Not unique, I shouldn't say that. We're in a situation like many states where we have limited numbers of insurance companies that want to come in and write business for these small group or individual plans. And although we have a large number on the insurance record that are qualified to do business in the state, we have a situation where we have the 800-pound gorilla. We got Blue Cross Blue Shield that's writing over 60% of our business. That's not really a healthy thing for a market, and that's a troublesome thing.
Representative Ledoux?
I have two questions here. The first one may have been covered already, but if it was, I missed it. What is the cost of this newborn screening?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair. The cost is approximately $20 to $60. So, and that's the full range of everything I can find.
Do we have any idea as to how many infants a year this are born in Alaska?
About 10,000 approximately.
Okay. Second question is a union policy a fraternal benefit society? Is that what we're... Okay, what is a fraternal benefit society?
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes, please.
Our insurance statutes are long, wondrous, and multiple in their application. There's certain underwriting groups in the United States that were founded on fraternal organizations, so our statutes actually speak to those and separate those from other types of insurance groupings. So they have special provisions in the law for just those, but they're probably analogous to most other insurance groups.
So are they governed by ERISA so that we could not be regulating them?
Typically, I would say that they're not.
Then I guess my question is, and I'm not really sure who to ask this to, is then what's the rationale for distinguishing between a fraternal benefit society and any other health care insurer?
Okay, because if I might, I think, and I may be wrong, but my best recollection is that we allow the fraternal societies a little more flexibility because they may want to have underwriting criterion that's peculiar to their membership. And therefore, we try to avoid mandating to them what they can or can't do, even though they're covered by statute. For example, Christian Scientists. I don't know if they have one. Really, you can.
Sons of Norway.
Right. They could have.
And Knights of Columbus is such a group. They sell different kinds of insurance products, but they have certain parameters you have to have in order to be a Knight of Columbus.
Right.
Representative Crawford and Guttenberg, do you have examples?
I have another question.
Any other questions, Representative Ledoux? And this is something I think the sponsors, Representative, you can address that, can't you, with a little bit more thorough response from Division of Insurance before, as this goes on to Finance Committee?
I guess not really a question, but I guess I'm somewhat concerned. I mean, I understand Representative Roekberg's concerns. I do. But it sounds to me like we need to make a policy decision as to whether we ought to require insurance carriers, whether they be insurance carriers or fraternal organizations or anybody else that we can require to make this a part of coverage or not to make this a part of coverage. And we determine as a policy consideration to require the insurance entity to make this as a part of coverage, then I guess I have a hard time distinguishing between fraternal benefit societies and any other health care insurer. So that's just my comment.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. My notes on what Reed Stoops, who is at the American Association of Health Plans, said last Friday was that generally he was in support, but his specific comment on Section 5 was that the Health Insurance Policy Association recommends a mandated offering rather than a benefit elective insurance.
Which is what Representative Roekberg talked about, I think, at the onset.
And really, this really only affects about 25%. It's already been offered. It's already being covered by the Native groups. It's already being covered by Medicaid. So from the bottom, you know, it is being covered, but it's that 25% who's privately insured.
Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. On page 2, section 2, legislative intent, subject to the availability, starting on line 13, subject to the availability of appropriations to implement 4720, 300 through 390. What are we talking about here? What is it that we're looking to fund if we're just mandating it to the industry?
I'd have to do more research on that.
Well, that's just in section 5. This is a much broader bill.
Yeah. So.
Okay. And that's something maybe you could supplement.
Well, yeah, supplement on that.
My comment also is subject to availability. I mean, everything that we do is subject to availability of appropriation. I mean, if we want to fund it, we fund it. If we don't, we don't. I mean, I know that some of this is boilerplate, but.
And that's Representative Roekberg.
Mr. Chairman, this is an intent language because this is not an appropriation bill. We're not making an appropriation, but it merely points out the intent of the legislature to fund it to the maximum extent.
Where it's not binding, but it's an intent.
Right. It's an intent language, but it's not enforceable, and it's not an appropriation bill, which has to be a separate bill.
Well, is there any other testimony online in the audience? Then I will close public testimony. We did adopt the CS, and I didn't hear any amendments at this stage. Are there any other questions or concerns from the committee, recognizing that it will go on to House Finance and recognizing that the sponsor will supplement your questions and will be available in the process? Representative Roekberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support this bill in terms of moving out of committee. I still have certain concerns about and some questions, primarily from the industry. I'll work with the sponsor on making sure this is clarified so it's understood about where the industry and where the impacts are, what the costs are, and if there's any impacts to the individual premiums, it could be negative to the whole health insurance delivery here in the state of Alaska. So,
and I hope
we'll work on that, and because I absolutely support the concept of the bill and what it's doing, but you have to be very careful about. When we are a lawmaking, to make public policy that's consistent and can be explained and will not have a negative impact, those unintended consequences we don't want to have, even though we're doing what we believe is obviously a wonderful thing, but there are some downsides that we need to be careful and have those questions answered.
Yeah.
And
I
concur.
Roekberg, I know when I spoke with Reed Stoops, he said every time we mandate, it costs the individual insurance carrier or the individual policy owner about $75 on additional per month on their policy.
But they have to rewrite their entire boilerplate law. I mean, all their stuff and all their policies and everything.
Well, we'll look at that, and I think that that supplement and that dialogue in the future, and I certainly hope to speak on in support of this bill on the floor, but I think that through our dialogue with the insurance industry, we can address that, and as our peers and colleagues have to analyze and assess the efficacy and everything else of this and voting for it, I think maybe we can address that on the floor and in the committee process. And I would also contend that Representative Ramros, with his Business Ventures and Fairbanks and Strong Chamber and NFIB ties and others has kept us in consideration. So we have to remember where this is coming from, someone who, similar to yourself, has owned, still owns many businesses and I think is weighing that same policy decision and probably defaults to what Representative Guttenberg says, which is the needs of protecting these children outweigh the small amount that is extrapolated out ultimately onto business owners.
Well, to expand on that, Mr. Chair, I mean, these 10 or 12 mandated benefits that have happened over the years, and I just wonder what kind, what societal savings we've had over the course of the years and what savings they've had to industry, private industry,
sure,
small businesses and insurance.
Ready to move the bill.
Good. We'll close public testimony, and I'll have a motion then. Representative Lynn.
I'll move this bill. Again, I agree with Representative Volkberg that you know, health insurance certainly needs to be made more available, need to be less costly, but of course nothing is very little more costly than having a hearing loss as a newborn, because it affects you throughout your entire life. And I strongly back this bill, and with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for House Bill 109 as amended with the attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. And do I need to read this?
Perfect. No, that's perfect. And is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved on to House Finance Committee, and thank you for your input. So we will then adjourn. The time is 4:29, and we'll see you on Wednesday. We just have one bill up, so it should be a short meeting. We are adjourned.
Promise. There's a dental bill on Wednesday.